Perry folded the map. He paid for the root beer and stood up. Sitting, he had seemed a more than normal-sized man. A powerful man, with the shoulders, the arms, the thick, crouching torso of a weightlifter. Weightlifting was, in fact, his hobby. But some sections of him were not in proportion to others. His tiny feet, encased in short black boots with steel buckles, would have neatly fitted into a delicate lady's dancing slippers. When he stood up, he was no taller than a 12-year-old child, and suddenly looked, strutting on stunted legs that seemed grotesquely inadequate to the grown-up bulk they supported, not like a well-built truck driver, but like a retired jockey, overblown and muscle-bound. Outside the drugstore, Perry stationed himself in the sun. It was 8:45, and Dick was a half hour late. However, if Dick had not hammered home the every-minute importance of the next 24 hours, he would not have noticed it. Time rarely weighed upon him, for he had many methods of passing it. Among them, mirror-gazing. Dick had once observed, "Every time you see a mirror, you go into a trance-like. Like you was looking at some gorgeous piece of butt. I mean, my God, don't you ever get tired?" Far from it. His own face enthralled him. Each angle of it induced a different impression. It was a changeling's face, and mirror-guided experiments had taught him how to ring the changes, how to look now ominous, now impish, now soulful. A tilt of the head, a twist of the lips, and the corrupt gypsy became the gentle romantic. His mother had been a full-blooded Cherokee. It was from her that he had inherited his coloring. The iodine skin, the dark, moist eyes, the black hair, which he kept brilliantined and was plentiful enough to provide him with sideburns and a slippery spray of bangs. His mother's donation was apparent. That of his father, a freckled, ginger-haired Irishman, was less so. It was as though the Indian blood had routed every trace of the Celtic strain. Still, pink lips and a perky nose confirmed its presence, as did a quality of roguish animation, of uppity Irish egotism, which often activated the Cherokee mask and took control completely when he played the guitar and sang. Singing, and the thought of doing so in front of an audience, was another mesmeric way of whittling hours. He always used the same mental scenery, a nightclub in Las Vegas, which happened to be his hometown. It was an elegant room filled with celebrities excitedly focused on the sensational new star rendering his famous, backed by violins version of I'll Be Seeing You, and encoring with his latest, self-composed ballad. Every April flights of parrots fly overhead, red and green, green and tangerine. I see them fly, I hear them high, singing parrots bringing April spring. Dick, on first hearing this song, had commented, "Parrots don't sing. Talk, maybe. Holler. But they sure as hell don't sing." Of course, Dick was very literal-minded. Very. He had no understanding of music, poetry. And yet, when you got right down to it, Dick's literalness, his pragmatic approach to every subject, was the primary reason Perry had been attracted to him. For it made Dick seem, compared to himself, so authentically tough, invulnerable, totally masculine. Nevertheless, pleasant as this Las Vegas reverie was, it paled beside another of his visions. Since childhood, for more than half his 31 years, he had been sending off for literature. Fortunes in diving, train at home in your spare time, make big money fast in skin and lung diving, free booklets, answering advertisements. Sunken treasure, 50 genuine maps, amazing offer. That stoked a longing to realize an adventure his imagination swiftly and over enabled him to experience. The dream of drifting downward through strange waters, of plunging toward a green sea dusk, sliding past the scaly, savage-eyed protectors of a ship's hulk that loomed ahead, a Spanish galleon, a drowned cargo of diamonds and pearls, heaping caskets of gold. A car horn honked, At last, Dick.